Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver, and I'm very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes, and we're going to start shortly. So please take your seat, get settled. You can sit on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair. And if you do sit in a chair, please sit with your feet flat on the floor. And as you get settled, I want to continue our discussion about the six paramitas, or transcendent actions. Today we're going to talk about the third transcendent action, which is patience. And if you want to go back and listen to the first two, which are generosity and discipline, you can, but you don't have to. You can just jump right in if this is where you're starting. So the six paramitas are said to be the actions that we can take that transport us to the other shore. Paramita means gone beyond and arrived on the other shore. So these are the actions that can take us from the world of craziness and pain and confusion to the other shore of sanity and decency and goodness, which I'm pretty sure we all want to get to. So the third, again, patience. One of my favorite definitions of patience, or one of my favorite formulas for patience, although it sounds absolutely impossible, and at the same time makes complete sense, like if you could do this thing, you would have all the patience in the world. One great Buddhist teacher said, I'm paraphrasing, the secret to perennial patience is having no expectations. And so if you think about that, of course, it makes complete sense. If you have no expectations, this should go well, this is probably not going to go well, you should feel this, you shouldn't feel that, well, then all you have is patience, because in the absence of expectations, there is just what is. So something to think about. As with generosity and discipline, there are three categories of patience. There were three categories of generosity: giving the gift of material goods, giving the gift of fearlessness, giving the gift of dharma. There are three categories of discipline, and there are three categories of patience. And I'll briefly explain what they are, and then we can go right to our practice. The first category of patience is called, I'm going to look at my notes, overcoming other people's destructiveness. Yeah. So, of course, nothing makes us more impatient than the aggression of other people. We have a reflexive response to aggression directed toward us, which is completely natural and makes total sense, and is, you know, let's face it, sometimes quite warranted. However, and patience doesn't look like just taking it. Patience does not look like being a doormat. Patience, in this sense, looks like not countering aggression with aggression, which only amplifies aggression. Don't take my word for that, please. Just give a cursory review to the entire scope of recorded history, and I believe my statement will win out, that countering aggression with aggression only ever, period, leads to more aggression. So overcoming other people's destructiveness means not countering aggression with aggression. Very complicated. Very complicated. We see almost zero examples of how to do this in our world. I just like to make sure once I've started talking that I've actually turned the microphone on. It's a skill of the highest order. None of our leaders seem to know how to do it. You know, one look at today's news will tell you that. Anyway, I'm not going to go off on a rant about that. Please, I ask you, my friends, to take as a contemplation, how would I counter aggression without aggression, which doesn't mean going, oh, yeah, okay, you can beat me up. Oh, it's no problem. Because we're talking about countering it. We're not talking about letting it stand. Because we must counter aggression. Right, Kitty? How do we do it without aggression? So I'll give you a very short example, then I'll tell you the other two categories briefly, and we'll go right to our practice. So a long time ago, 6-7 years ago, in the Open Heart Project, there was something that I had been offering for free, like meditation instruction 3 times a week for free for like 3 years. And I realized, oh, well, I have to charge something somewhere because this has become my full-time job. And I want to keep doing it, but I can't keep doing it for free because I can't work for free because I live on Earth. So I sent out an email saying, I'm not going to send you guys 3 meditations a week for free. I'm going to send you 1 a week for free, which I still do. And if you want to get more, I'm going to start charging something. I can't remember what it was. I can't remember what it was, honestly. But it wasn't like $1 million a week. It was something like $20 a week or a month. So most people just didn't say anything. Some people said, oh, cool. Thanks. I'm happy to support you. And a very few people said, I'm going to curse now. Well, I'll bleep myself. You effing bee. You're a scam artist. You're blah, blah. So I got one of the particular emails was, you're such a liar. You did the bait and switch. You're just like everyone else. I thought you were really a spiritual person, but you're just after my money. And if this hurts your feelings, I don't care. You can just go. This is my favorite part. You can just go cry to your friends Deepak and Oprah. I laugh now. And I laughed then, I'll be honest, but it also really hurt my feelings because, dude, I'd been giving you these things for free for some years. And in that, just went whoop. Anyway, everyone who works in the online space says, you've got to just delete those things. But I felt this wave of aggression coming toward me. I felt that it was completely undeserved, of course. I felt like I wanted to fight back. Like, don't you know I'm blah, blah. So I couldn't delete it. I didn't know what to do. So I just emailed back and said, this really hurt me. Words have consequences. And just like everyone, I'm just trying to do my best in this world. And your words really hurt my feelings. I wish you the best. Kind of didn't mean that in the moment, but I think I said that. Okay. I thought that's it. I immediately get an email back from her saying, well, you hurt my feelings because I really came to value these meditations. I started accounting on them and I can't afford X per month, whatever it was. Oh, okay. Well, now we're in a different world. You asshole. No, you asshole. You know, that's a one-way ticket to Palookaville. We're not going anywhere in that conversation, but you hurt me. Well, oh, well, you hurt me too. That's a conversation two human beings can have with heart. So, you know, it just happened to work out that way. I'm not saying I'm a great person and I did this Buddhist-y thing, but that to me is an example of countering aggression without aggression. And the weapon by which it was countered in this case was genuineness, just honesty. Which leads me to the second form of patience, which is realizing the nature of other, well, the second and third, realizing the nature of other people's aggression is the second, hello, boo-boo, is the second category of patience. So in this story, this woman didn't really think I was an asshole, I don't think. She was hurt. That's why she lashed out. I'm not saying it made her inexcusable because it didn't. She did the wrong thing. But once I realized that actually she was hurt for reasons that had nothing to do with me, my patience returned. And actually I said to her, oh, okay, well, you can't afford this. Well, what could you afford? 1 cent? $1? Yeah, we'll do that. So she came back to me with whatever, 1 cent or $1, I don't remember what it was, and we did that. So that is the gateway to patience, is realizing the nature of other people's aggression. I mean, I don't have to explain that. I'm sure you've had that experience. Someone acts in a terrible way, and then you learn, oh, they just had a death in the family, or, you know, they want a cat and they can't have one, and oh, okay, I'll give you a pass this time. And the third and final category of patients is called individually examining. I really like this one. Individually examining. So in my little story, without beating a dead beast, individually examining here looks like responding to this person and having this conversation to whatever end. It happened to work out well in this case, it might not have. But non-individually examining would have looked like, oh, people are assholes. I'll never make a living. Or if I ever ask people to pay for what I'm doing, they're all going to hate me. Or in other words, making assumptions about others based on one experience. I don't have to tell you where that gets us. Do not have to tell you where that gets us. That is the root of prejudice. That is the root of violence, is thinking, well, this is what I think about this one person, and therefore I think it about all the people that look like this, act like this, have that name, wear those shoes, go to this school, whether it's positive or negative. I'm giving a talk in a few weeks. It's called Mindfulness and Psychotherapy. I don't know anything about psychotherapy, but I'm giving a talk based on the Four Noble Truths of Love, my book. And it's co-presented by Harvard. It's Harvard Medical School, Cambridge Health Associates present the Mindfulness and Psychotherapy Conference, whatever it's called. So many people have messaged me going, hey girl, great, you made it. This is the big time. Because they see that Harvard logo with the lion going like this. And I'm telling you, it's not that. It's a hotel room. There can be like a couple hundred therapists. I'll give my talk. I hope it will go well. I'm thrilled and honored to do it. But people see that word Harvard in that logo and they make these assumptions. Oh, now she's a genius and she's going to do this important thing. And she's at this. No, 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 no. Ixnay. The big danger is I would believe that, but I know the truth. So this non-individually examining leads to all sorts of assumptions. Assumptions are killers. It doesn't look like classic impatience, like anger and unwillingness to tolerate. This form of impatience is, I've already made an assumption about you. I'm not stopping to examine what's really happening. I've made my conclusion. I've jumped to it. Based on Bupkis. So patience is the opposite of those things. It is overcoming people's aggression without aggression. It is realizing the nature of their confusion, which is not an opposite, I realize. And it is examining things individually. So forget what I said about opposites. Those are the three keys to patience. So I hope that's useful. Please stay tuned next week when we're going to talk about the fourth of the six paramitas, which is called exertion, which doesn't mean, you know, like trying really hard, although sometimes it does. Another word for exertion in this context is diligence, which is a fabulous quality, often overlooked. Tune in next week. And in the meantime, let's practice. Begin your practice, please, by rousing patience for yourself and patience for the practice. It is unfolding. Whether it seems like that from one breath to another or not, it is. Please trust me on that. Even if this is your first time meditating. So take your seat by sitting up straight. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. And really let them become heavy. Let the belly relax a lot. The area around the heart, the throat. Let the shoulders relax down the back. Nothing to carry or tug right now. You can just relax. It's awesome. The chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long. The mouth is closed. The lips and teeth are slightly parted, which helps the jaw to relax. And really feel all the muscles of speech relax. The jaw, the tongue, the throat, as mentioned. They don't have to work at all right now. You can just be silent and notice your own inner silence, because there is no one in there talking, honestly. The breath is natural in and out through the nose. You are already breathing, so please simply continue. And in our practice, the eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a spot in front, up to 6 feet or 1.5 meters. And let the eyes be very soft. And the crown of the head reaches up a little bit, while the sit bones continue to reach down. Up and down, strong and soft. We can feel all that in our own body in this posture. Now feel your body breathing. Let your attention rest on the sensation of breath. Feel the in-breath and the out-breath. The next in-breath will just happen. Go with it, feeling that in-breath and that out-breath. Your mind will continue to make thoughts because that's what it does. There's no effort to change that in any way or stop that or slow that, ixnay. Rather, let your thoughts come and go, which is what they will do anyway. They'll come and go. Most of them will do so without really distracting you too much from your breath. And you don't have to do anything about those thoughts. Simply allow them to be like background noise. But if you notice at any point that you have become distracted by a line of thought, carried away by a line of thought, to the point where you have forgotten about your breath, like you're not feeling it anymore, excellent, because you just woke up, which is excellent. And saw where you were, and have choices, therefore. The choice here is to notice that you're thinking. See that. Let go. Gently. Doesn't matter what the content of the thought is. Come back and take a fresh start. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you so much for practicing with me. And thank you so much for practicing together. Wherever you are, it is likely there is someone else in the Open Heart Project who has been practicing with you, because there are now close to 20,000 of us all over the world. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.